This is Straight to the Heart, Radio Conversations, a program exploring important social and community themes to nurture greater understanding of our world and lives through dialogue with authors, activists, experts, and community members.
Welcome to Straight to the Heart. I'm Ron Chapman. If there is one theme that runs through the development of our society and culture, it is simply how to get things done, or more specifically, how to get people into action. Rabbi Malka Drucker has a remarkable foundation for this subject, including her research about those who saved the lives of Jewish people in the midst of the Holocaust in her book Rescuers, the empowerment of women in her award-winning book White Fire, and involvement with Hamakom, a Santa Fe community practicing loving kindness as a foundation for social action. Obviously, her Judaism is central as well, given that religion's long and rich tradition with progressive and social causes. Malka, welcome to Straight to the Heart.
Thank you, Ron.
Let's just set the scene a little bit for our listeners. You've got this broad background, and as I did my research and Googling and everything, Malka, it's like, what drives you? Where's the obvious passion come from in you?
That's a really good question. I mean, I've been asking myself that my whole life. I'm not sure. I know this. I am curious. There are a lot of things that interest me. My first book was about baseball, which I'm sure you know. You saw.
Yeah.
And I've written about Holocaust, and I've written about Frida Kahlo. But I'm always looking for the thread that connects everything. And I think that what I'm looking for is that which drives us beyond self-interest. The subjects that I've chosen, the people that I'm drawn to, that's really what it's about, is that there is some sense that we are vessels, if you will, put here to do what we're supposed to do. Why people behave altruistically in the case of rescuers where non-Jews risk their lives to save the lives of Jews. When I asked that question directly of those who did it, they didn't have the answer. But what I did find from it is that the more I asked that question, the more I realized they weren't just being humble and saying, I can't answer it. What they were really saying to me was, how could you not be this way? What else are we here for except to leave things better than we found it? And even in infants, we find altruistic behavior. So it would seem that it is part of the glory of the human spirit. And I went looking for the Olympians, the altruists who risked their lives to do this.
It reminds me of an article I remember reading about somebody who had interviewed a lot of Medal of Honor winners and people who had done very heroic deeds on the battlefield. And a pretty consistent response was just the one you described. They talked to someone who'd done something, you know, pretty extraordinary, and their response was sort of these, well, I don't know, it seemed like the thing to do, as if there was no thought involved. It was sort of a calling forthness, that's not even a word, but it really validates that idea that there's just something in there that sometimes can just pop forth.
Right, and I think that, and I mean, there was one man I remember, a Dutch rescuer, who said, you know, there would be a bunch of us children standing, you know, by the canals, and a child would fall into the water, and I was always the first one to jump into the water. I don't know why that was, that I was the one who did this. So I think in some ways, some of us are called differently from others to do this. And I think that, I mean, I would like to believe that all of us are really wanting to be part of something bigger. The spark within us, being in the image of God, that's what it means, is there's something larger than ourselves that we want to connect to, because if it's only ourselves, I mean, there is this wonderful expression in Judaism, if I am only for myself, who am I? If I am not for myself, who will be for me? So it really is a matter of being for oneself, and yet that's not enough. And the one thing the rescuers taught me, I mean, actually they taught me many things, but the most important thing they taught me was, I have grown up in a world that has told me the more I get, the happier I'll be. This is not proven to be true. The rescuers showed me that the more you give in this life, that's the path to this happiness. So that really, I think we're hardwired that way if we can get to our essence, to our root.
Well, as I read some of the background material on the work you do with the women, I was struck by, as you look at the list of women who've been involved with, some pretty prominent women who've come to work with the groups you bring together with White Fire. I was really struck by high-powered, and to steal your earlier word, what a theme of altruism there was that ran in the midst of that. So it's almost like all these women are called to something. What is it that pulls that forth from them, Malka? What is it that causes them to become galvanized, to work on behalf of something that's clearly much larger than them?
These women are all women spiritual leaders of many different faith paths. And some of them are very, very famous. And then it gets a little confusing why we do the work. I mean, I struggle with this all the time because the ego piece is tremendous and it can be confusing. And some of them do work that only God knows what they're doing in this world. What I did find as a theme for many, many of them was many had been in other, had done, as you say, these are activists who want to make the world a better place. And they were in government or they were in, you know, various forms of, you know, civil rights. And many of them, like Joan Halifax in Santa Fe, the Roshi up there, saying that you're working in a place where you're continually frustrated by the politics of things. Second of all, you find that there's a great deal of acrimony in these places. There are the good guys and the bad guys. This is not the universe that we're conceiving of. These are women who had three things in common: gender, calling, and authority. And what women share is that they, as Halifax will say, it hardly matters what we do because nobody expects much of women to begin with. So for many of us who've been sort of outsiders, it's created an extra empathy for all outsiders. I interviewed a woman who was a bishop. She was the second woman, black woman bishop in the United States. And she said, you know, as a black woman, how can I turn away? She was a Methodist. How can I turn away from my denomination's rejection of gays and lesbians? I identify with them. So I think that women by nature are going to identify with those who have been outsiders in this society. So I think that also has driven many of us.
That almost begs the question, Malka. Is part of what gets us into action, at least on behalf of others, is it some capacity for empathy? Is there something empathic about the response that calls this forth from within us?
Oh, I think that's absolutely true. I mean, one of God's names has got to be empathy with a capital E. That part of us that will respond to another is, to me, the piece that not only, you know, makes life worth living, but from a place of looking for the transcendent, that's the moment. I mean, God dwells between you and me right now. You may be in the image. I may be in the image. But to find God, it's how we're doing business together in this moment. So it is about empathy. I mean, one of the rescuers was very funny. I mean, we interviewed many Polish rescuers. Many of them were anti-Semites. Well, that has nothing to do with it, they'd say. I mean, if I saw a cat suffering. And there are some people, and again, the reason that my book has so many different faces on it is there are so many paths to goodness. I mean, some people, I mean, there were illiterate people, there were religious people, atheists, everything else. But the one thing that these people had in common is that I call them holy busybodies. They really wanted to know what was happening around them. They were the opposite of bystanders. I learned that there were four parts to play in the war. There were the victims, the perpetrators, the bystanders, and the rescuers. That applies now. It has always applied. And you're going to decide which one. And so many of us are bystanders in this life. We think, what can we do? And one of the stories, the most moving story for me is a story of a family with two children in Warsaw. And they were peasants. And he was in the garment business. And Jews were his customers. And overnight, when the ghetto went up, he was out of business. And he wanted to know what happened. So he snuck into the ghetto with a friend, put on a yellow armband so he could pass, because it was a capital crime to go in. And he saw a child die before his eyes of starvation. And he came home, and he was shaking, and he said to his wife, "We've got to do something." And his wife said, "What can we do? Thousands are dying every day. We can save one." What may drive us could be, some people have a heart where they just can't say no. But some of us maybe should have a little fear, because the end of our life, what will they say at our funeral? The worst thing that can happen at a funeral is not the copious tears. It's the lack of them. And who do we cry for? The one who loves. And the one who loves reaches out to others.
Is it situational, Malka? Is it that something happens and suddenly we crack open and we have this capacity to care about others in ways that we might not otherwise? Or is it something we can cultivate? Do families help cultivate this?
The way that we got started in this project was that we were following on the heels of social scientists in the mid-80s who were looking at altruistic behavior and trying to see if there was a common thread. And they were looking for patterns. And they did find some patterns. I mean, they did say that, for example, the rescuers tended to be very independent nonconformists. Right. I mean, what they did was crazy. I mean, let's be honest about this.
Right.
In Judaism, there's an idea that there's such a thing as causeless hatred. That's what destroys the temple, destroys everything. Causeless hatred. If you think about what goes on in the world, most of what goes on is causeless enmity. The rescuers were the opposite, causeless goodness. I mean, I remember we did an interview with Dutch rescuers, and the daughter was there. She was 5 during the war. She remembers her parents sending her to a bus stop with a note in her pocket, and a resistance person would come and take it from her. And I looked, and I said, "My God, you risked your life, your children's lives. How could you do that?" And the woman's eyes flashed, and she said to me, "We did this work because we had children, so they would know, if it was the last thing we did, what it was to be a human being." But there was another one who said her father was the Count of Silesia, and they were all anti-Semites, and her brother was a Nazi, and her mother hated her. So she looked at me and she said, "So, you know, the sting of injustice was something I knew early in my life." And she married a Jew. She saved hundreds of Jews in her Berlin apartment as a revenge.
So,
the many paths.
So her motives were even a little bit suspect in that case.
Exactly. The motive is irrelevant. You know, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. I mean, do good. I don't care why you're doing good. You're doing good, so your name is on a building? Fine. You gave them the money for the building? Good enough. It doesn't matter. Whatever, you know, what you're asking is where does conscience come from? There was one woman who talked about in Amsterdam. She was a young student, a psychoanalyst, and she was riding her bike when she saw a Gestapo truck stop in front of a nursery school. The soldiers ran into the building. They took the children out of the building and threw them into the back of the truck like sacks of potatoes. She saw two women try to stop them, and they were thrown in also. And she was on her bike, frozen with horror and fear. And her shame of not acting made her into a rescuer. This is what it means to be a human being, and you can do it. We all have the capacity to have that empathy and care more for somebody else.
This is Ron Chapman at Straight to the Heart in a conversation about personal and social action with Rabbi Malka Drucker, who you can learn more about at www.malkadrucker.com. Malka, you have to ask the question, where do we get stuck then? I mean, there's obviously some cultural things where we become very isolated, I guess, and very self-absorbed. I think people would probably agree with that. And at the same time, there are clearly a lot of things that just simply stop us in our tracks. What are the phenomena, I guess is the right question, that seem to be making it so difficult for some of us to not get into action, even when maybe in our own best interests?
Well, I think that, first of all, fear, that we don't have enough. That sense of surfeit within us mm-hmm. makes us very self-absorbed. What do I care what you are suffering? I have my own problems. My big story on this one was when the show was at MoMA in 1992, they had a book signing afterwards. We gave a little talk, and we went into the bookstore, and it was just fabulous. I mean, boy, I mean, New York, we really hit the big time. I gave the same pitch, you know, that here are these four parts to play, and each of us has opportunity to be a more caring person in this world, to be more patient with each other. And my father had come to hear me speak. He was standing next to me, and there we are in this bookstore, and there are lots of well-dressed people from Manhattan there, as who are always there, Sunday afternoon, and there's a man there who doesn't belong there. He is filthy. He smells. He is a homeless person. There's no question. And I see him beginning to walk towards us, and I start stepping backwards. And my father says, "Mike, hi, come over here." And the man comes over, and he puts out his hand, and I suck it up and put out mine. I'm thinking about how I'm going to wash it as quick as I can. That's what's on my mind. And the story is that my father had taken the bus uptown, and he was telling some people next to him that his daughter had the show at MoMA, and he was so proud. And here this homeless man was riding the bus, and he overheard him, and he wanted to see the photographs of these rescuers. So here it was, right in front of me, and I faced my own resistance about this. And all of us have that, Ron. But I think the piece of it is that if we woke up every morning and we said, "God's will, not mine," we would hear within ourselves that we were not put here to grab everything we can today for ourselves and then run home and stockpile it somewhere. That really isn't God's will for us. Yet our inclination is to do that because we're afraid that we don't have enough time, enough energy, enough stuff. In Hebrew, the word for giving to another is not philanthropy or charity, which have something to do with feelings from the heart. It's tzedakah means justice. It means righteousness. It is what you are supposed to do. No pat on the back. You're a human being. Behave like one. And what stops us from doing that? We live in a world that regards those on top as the heroes and the winners. I mean, altruism isn't one of those things that's going to get you a big house somewhere. But I saw with these rescuers that there was another way to live. And in some ways, I think that's what led me also to create a community, this community in Santa Fe, to say, look at this idea that we're based on a principle of loving kindness. This has to do with every board meeting, every conversation we have. And when you see somebody walk through the door you've never seen before, you have opportunity to do this. So in some ways, what you're talking about, I would say, what will correct this for each of us individually is become part of some group.
It's a principle. The principle is, I was thinking this a moment ago, you know, do the right thing. Doesn't matter what your motive is. Doesn't matter what you're thinking about it. Just do it because you're supposed to do it, which I guess is a fairly simple call to action that sort of cuts through all the psychological and mental nonsense that I suspect most of us battle.
It's not so much about belief. If you were depending on my heart to do good, every now and then I'd be fabulous. But I can't depend on that on myself. You know, I confess all the time, you know, that you know, I'm highly human on this level. I'm so glad that I have a code of behavior. Some will say, it seems so mechanical. Your heart isn't attached to it. But really, the idea is, you do it, and the day comes that you get it. You know this is the path. I think it's so hard for us, you know, in a society where we don't really have groups like this, we're not encouraged to behave this way, and furthermore, we feel a little dumb when we're the ones who are always doing it. And we need to be together to say, you're doing a great job, Ron. I'm really glad. I'm really glad to know you because you've done something that has raised all the boats, not just your own.
So these are the central principles within Hamacome. The community is based on this very subject we're talking about.
That's right. I mean, that's right. And of course, you know, we're human and we do the best we can. And even the rabbi doesn't always behave with loving kindness. Yet, you know, if you set this out as the idea and the ideal, we have to remind each other that we have the capacity to do this because it doesn't come naturally. It's really counterintuitive if you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it says 36 times in the Bible, love your neighbor as yourself. Why 36 times? Because it's not what we're thinking about doing.
We get lost along the way, apparently.
That's right.
So there's some kind of place here for a great deal of compassion for ourselves and obviously for others, too. The fact that it's pretty normal to get wrapped up in ourselves, and yet part of the call we're talking here is to keep trying to crack through that self-absorption and the failings and the resentments and all those things that show up and do it anyway.
Part of the liturgy in the morning is, God, the soul you have given me is pure. And I love that because I really think about this, whatever this is. My mother always talked about conscience being Jiminy Cricket, so, you know, Disney worked for me, and I was like, but whatever it is that there's a part of us that we can uncover. The idea of the circumcised heart, that we uncover that the heart wants to be in this relationship, wants to be there for another, and that we resist it. We resist it because it hurts. We resist it because we're afraid that if I give you my heart, you'll reject something and then I'll be in pain with this thing. But if we understand this, not quite so personally, but that we are, in fact, vessels, and this that we feel is not us, but it's something else that calls. I mean, this is the repair of the world that we talk about. This is what repairs the world, is this sense that we can have this connection with each other. Rescuers touched me because these were living examples of it. And they weren't all loving people. I mean, loving kindness is not love. Love is easy. I love you. I'll give you lots. Loving kindness is when I don't love you, but I behave with love. It's something assuring to know that I'm not going to have to depend upon my crazy heart all the time. That I really do have these behaviors that are going to make sure that I'm doing what I'm supposed to do in this life. So each of us has something different to do. And I think that's why it's so great that your focus is on action. Because, oh, my God, how many times will people embrace you? I love you. We should get together. Do you get the email?
Yeah.
Let's have lunch. I mean, so the feeling piece is really, it doesn't mean nearly as much as the action. And I don't care really about the attitude so much. Let God take care of the attitude. The refinement of the soul that brings you to a place where you know that this is the right path and you feel comfortable in it, it'll come. But begin with the action.
So for the purposes of our listeners, who I'm sure are thinking a lot of things as a result of our chat, Melka, what words would you have for them? Sort of a summation, thoughts that they might be able to go forth with that maybe could serve them well.
Well, I think if they're, you know, anything like most of us, they're living in a world right now that's making them uneasy and sad and frightened. And I have grandchildren now, and I think of the world that they will be living in. So I think to myself, what can we do? I mean, this is the action piece. And I would say to any of your listeners that the first thing to do is to sit with oneself and ask, how am I doing? Am I satisfied within myself? Now, then if we're feeling terrible, check it out with somebody that you trust, because some of us are very hard on ourselves, and we're never satisfied. I mean, many, many, many of the rescuers, if you saw Schindler's List, at the very end, what does Schindler say? I wish I'd done more. So many of us are just plagued by, you know, an ego to feel that we could save the world. But again, I would remember what that rescuer said that I said earlier. We can save one. There's another, the Talmud says, it's not yours to finish, nor yours to put down. And if you don't have something in your hand right now that you can't say that I am not in some way working to make this world better than I found it, however it is, it can be with one person, one child, then I would say you're missing your opportunity in this life. It's kind of like, you know, being told to try a different diet. You know, everybody today is no carbs, no fat, lots of fat, whatever else it is. I would say experiment. If you're feeling really complacent as you're hearing me speak, I would say you're on the wrong path. Nobody should feel a complacency. I'm doing just fine. If you're feeling like I could do more, see what you can do to do more. I would also say, if you're not part of any community, and if you're something of a loner, and look, I'm a writer, I identify with this, I would say, then your work is to connect with community, not for your sake, but for the community's sake, for the society's sake. And it's one of the wonderful things of being in New Mexico, because there really are so many places where we can do this. And look at you, Ron. Look at this good work you're doing right now. I mean, so at the end of the day, do an inventory every day. How did I do today? Did I do anything today that might have made some difference for somebody? So that's what I would say. You know, I'm hoping that I've afflicted a few people here. That's really my work. You know?
Well, Malka, thank you so much for your work in the world and for taking the time to visit with me here on Straight to the Heart. Thank you to our broadcast audience for listening with open hearts and minds. We've been in conversation with Rabbi Malka Drucker. If you'd like to know more about her, check out her website at www.malkadrucker.com. For Straight to the Heart, I'm Ron Chapman, wishing you rich, meaningful, and moving conversation.
Straight to the Heart is produced by Ron Chapman at KUNM-FM, 89.9 in Albuquerque, New Mexico. The executive producer is Marcos Martinez. Theme music provided by Suite 42. Copies of this program may be obtained by calling KUNM at 505-277-4516. This is Straight to the Heart, Radio Conversations.